So we're in the middle of our class on building a strong church. Just to get us up to speed, we'll review what we've covered so far. How to build a strong church. Previously, we talked about to be strong, we must be united. We talked about the dangers threatening the church. We talked about our strength ultimately comes from God. We also talked about the strength of the church comes from the individual members. Last week, we talked about being a disciple. So this week, we're going to talk about leadership. And after I got this all put together, I figured I got enough here for two classes. So the goal is to get halfway through it today. We'll see how successful we are. Let's start out talking about the need for leadership. In Proverbs 11:14, where there is no guidance to the people will fall, but in an abundance of counselors, there is victory. So this is true of any organization, a kingdom, a church, a company. Someone must know the goals of the organization. Someone must point the way, the direction for everybody to go. Someone must lead the way, show the way. Someone must make decisions. And someone must be the glue that holds everything together. Here's a quote from John Quincy Adams. If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. That goes right into my first point. Actually, my second point coming up. But a strong leader, a strong church needs strong leadership. And it's not just the elders. Like John Quincy Adams said, if you have these traits, you're a leader. There are many varieties of leadership. Everyone of us falls into one of the categories we're going to talk about today. So let's talk about leaders in the church. Of course, we need to start with elders. In Acts 20:28, Apostle Paul was warning the elders from Ephesus, "Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood." So the elder is to act as a shepherd. And it's assumed in the term pastor. Pastor is similar to pasture. And it refers to being a shepherd. So what are the specific responsibilities of an elder, of a shepherd? To identify danger, that's a good one. I'd put that under protection.
Against false teaching.
Guard against false teaching, good. What else?
Teach people to be elders.
Right, groom or prepare people to take on leadership roles. Let's see what I came up with here myself. We need to feed the flock by teaching in sermons and classes. We need to protect the flock, we talked about that. We need to lead the flock. We need to nurture the flock. So all these things are important. All of them are come under the realm of eldership. Then we can talk about deacons. In Acts 6, verse 3, "Therefore, brethren, select from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, who we may put in charge of these things, for this task." So ultimately, the deacon is a servant when you boil it all down. That's what the Greek word means, deaconos. He supports the church. The whole church benefits from his work. The elders delegate and direct the deacons. Now, does that mean a deacon can make a decision? Sure. We depend on making decisions. We've got some wise men in our position of deacons right now. We rely on them heavily. We don't give them much direction, actually, but they're self-independent and able to do the work on their own and make wise decisions along the way. Also, leaders in the church would be an evangelist. 2 Timothy 4, verse 5. But you be sober in all things, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. So the evangelist is really a gospeler. The word comes from the Greek word of good news. His mission is to proclaim the good news. He is not a combination of a leader, of an elder and a deacon. Sometimes we like to give everything to the preacher to have him to work on it. But that's not his job. His main job is to be a preacher of the gospel. His motivation is to serve. Then we can talk about teachers. Hebrews 5:12, for though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again to be someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. So we're all expected to be teachers in some sense. So in what ways do we teach?
There's direct teaching, which, you know, like you're doing.
Public teaching, sure.
There's also by example.
That's right, we teach by example. Any other ways? About private conversation, can we teach in private conversation?
Yes.
Sure. So we can teach God's word in organized classes. We teach her in conversation. We teach our children. And when you teach, you are leading. Just another kind of leadership. Then we've got older women. Older women are leaders in the church. Titus 2, verses 3 and 4. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. So what are the expectations for older women in the church? Basically, yeah. How would they do that? How do women mentor younger women? Teaching a class? Sure, all those are good ways. Older faithful women are invaluable teachers. They mentor, lead, or encourage younger women. They teach how Christian women should behave. And they can teach lessons a man just can't understand. We're just not prepared to teach a woman her responsibilities sometimes.
Rob.
Yes, Debbie.
Just thinking about that, I think it's difficult for a man to teach a wife how to be in subjection.
It's hard for a husband to teach a wife anything. But what is the nature of subjection? Is it something you teach a person? That's true.
So to understand what it means to a woman to submit their life to a man, do you have a concept of that?
So what is the best thing a man can do to help his wife be in subjection?
Be a good leader.
Yeah, not bully them into position.
You can't make somebody be in subjection.
Right. Mike? I didn't hear the first part.
Subject ourselves to God.
Oh, of course.
That's an example.
Yeah, Debbie said that more than once, that she's not in subjection to me per se. She's in subjection to God first. I just happen to be the recipient of the subjection.
You're the middleman.
Yeah, I'm the middleman. I'm the one that's blessed. So older men, Titus 2:2, older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, and perseverance. What are the expectations of older men? Remember a situation back in Burien when we were there in Burien Church. There was an older man, and he said, "I'm ready to retire now from doing work in the church, and let the younger guys take up the slack." Is that the model we see in the New Testament? No, just the opposite, isn't it? Older men can be a good example, and older men have the wisdom and life's experience. Yes, Rhonda. I'm not sure I can put a number on it. So with some people, it's later in life than others.
Well, I spoke with a preacher in the area, and when we were talking, we both had elder fathers. And he said, people are putting a lot of pressure on my very elderly, I'm saying over 80, father, wanting to bring their personal problems that are breaking his heart. He's old, and
right. A couple things about that. Who could think of an example in the Old Testament of somebody who was overwhelmed with responsibility? Moses. And what did they do? They had to help out with the workload. So like you said, you don't have to always go to the oldest man in the congregation, but you need to go to an older one, not somebody in his 30s. But he doesn't have to be in his 80s either. Basically, someone with a life experience has lived a life and knows a few things or two. So older faithful men are to teach by example. They have a lot of wisdom to share. They're an encouragement to the church. There's one historical reference to the Apostle John that always encourages me. He's in his later years, hardly able to get around, and he props himself up with his walking stick in the middle of the congregation and just says a few words, love one another. And that in itself is a sermon. Okay, we can all be mentors. 2 Timothy 2:2 talks about this concept. Things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So there's a pattern of passing on your knowledge and wisdom to the next generation. Who can be a mentor? Pardon? Almost anybody. Can a sixth grader be a mentor? Yeah, exactly. Almost anyone is the right answer because a 3-month-old can't do much mentoring. But there's always somebody littler or younger than you that you can help out and encourage. We should be willing and able to teach what we learn. It's not just a bare fact of sharing what you've been given. Be willing to share the gospel, to share God's truth. There's always someone younger who needs your help. Look for opportunities to encourage. Then we can be leaders by being an example. Philippians 3:17, brethren, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern you have in us. So you can follow the Apostle Paul as your pattern, as your example, but he said there's plenty of other people around here that walk according to the same pattern that can be examples to you also. You don't have to be an apostle to be an example. What ways can we be examples? Jim.
We're examples no matter what we do, so hopefully we're good examples. So every way you think about it, if you're living your life righteously, you are hopefully a good example of other people.
Yeah, so the first part you said was we're examples whether we do good or evil. Right, I agree with that. You're going to be a good example no matter what you do. Let's hope it's a good thing. Whether good or bad, you are an example. You're in the limelight. There's always somebody watching. We're not usually very conscious of that, but there's always little eyes watching what you do every step of the way, whether it's your children or younger Christians. Be careful where your steps lead. Here's a quote from Joe DiMaggio. A person always doing his or her best becomes a natural leader just by example. And that's very true. We're going to be a good example if we do our best. Parents are leaders in the church. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So when we talk about kids' classes, we always throw out this phrase, who is responsible to teach your children? You are. What is the church's role in this? A consultant, a supplement? Sure. Rhonda? Right, a resource is a church is a resource, it's a facilitator to teach your children. We offer or help to organize things and present organized lessons, but ultimately it's your responsibility to teach them. So fathers and mothers lead their children. Be careful where or how you lead. This is an edited quote from Richard Branson. He was actually talking about employees, but someone got a little creative and changed employee to children. Train children well enough so they can leave. Treat them well enough so they don't want to. And that's parenting in a nutshell. Debbie and I always joke about how we raise our kids to be mature, independent adults, and they go off and do it. Move away and be independent. So it's a curse and a blessing. Then there's always the leadership of the grandparents. 2 Timothy 1:5, for I'm mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice. For I'm sure that it is in you as well. So how do grandparents lead? This is a trap, so be careful.
Your example.
Your example, okay. That's probably the big number one. Grandparents are not the parent. That's the trap we can fall into. This is a vacation where you need to subject yourself to your children, let them raise their own children. You can be a resource or a consultant for them, for your children. Don't take over. Who is the authority in the family? Is it the grandfather or the grandmother? God is ultimately, he put the father in charge. Sometimes grandparents will like to take over, but sometimes they have to if the parents are delinquent. But in a normal family, the father should be the one in charge. And being leaders in the church, each individual member can be a leader in some way. Romans 12, 6 through 8. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, each of us is to exercise them accordingly. If prophecy according to the portion of his faith, if service in his serving, and he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, and he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. So there are a lot of roles that members can take in the church, and which are, you can technically call them leadership positions. And how would that be? How do normal members lead? What things could they do that would be considered leading? I see a pitch pipe up here. That's a clue. I see a pitch pipe up here. That should be a clue. Song leaders, prayer leaders, Lord's Supper leaders, ushers, even greeting visitors can be a position of leadership. If you're showing someone how to do it, be an example of how to do it. We've been doing some work on Facebook, on the internet, inviting people to come to worship with us. It's going to be important for people to be greeted and made to feel at home. When you do that, you're actually in a position of leadership. Okay, that was the halfway point. So I've still got enough time to go through some of the next half of the class. Qualities of leadership, qualities of leaders. When you start out talking about qualities of leaders, the number one quality is going to have to be faith. Romans 10:38, but by my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So faith is the foundation of leadership. Without faith, you can't be a good leader in the church. How does a leader display faith? What is it that faith does for a leader?
Showing love to other people.
Okay, showing love to other people.
Doing what's best for other
people. Doing what's best for them.
Confidence.
Give them confidence.
Yeah.
Right?
Leaders, it's not specifically necessary, but we like it when leaders are confident. They seem to know what they're doing. And someone who's strong in faith can have that confidence.
Very good. That's why elders are elder men. Debbie?
Well, it's kind of like in a family, you don't want mom and dad running around like they don't know what they're doing. It doesn't give your children security. If you and Paul were running around, but I don't know what we're going to do.
Unlike some of the shows on TV these days,
right,
where they show the father to be a buffoon. Rhonda?
Faithful, you're there
Very good. We don't usually say it in these words, but Paul and I, the message we want to get across is we're not doing things because we want to do them. We want to do things because God wants us to do them. That's where the faith comes in. We're trusting God to follow his process in his direction.
I think an important word there was consistency.
Right.
Good leader doesn't usually do surprising things where you have to question why would you do that. They show the same qualities over and over and over.
Like if Paul and I just decide we're going to put up a Ferris wheel in the parking lot. We want to stick to the ancient paths. Rhonda?
I know one church that changed their services so that the men could go to a golf game on Sunday morning with members of another congregation so that they could have fellowship that morning. They come in the afternoon and change their services for it. And other people could say, well, Labor Day weekend we're going to go to a concert somewhere.
Right, exactly. Good example. So leaders must trust God and his word. We're not just restricting this to the elders. All leaders in the church need to trust God and his word. We get into trouble when we lose our trust in God and start to trust in our own wisdom. Here's a quote from Oswald Sanders. To be a leader in the church has always required strength and faith beyond the merely human. So faith is definitely the foundation of leadership. Then we can talk about humility. John 13, 14 and 15. If I then the Lord and the teacher washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Okay, what's your definition of humility? What does humility mean to you?
Selfless.
Selfless. The way I heard it stated one time is that you think about yourself the same way God thinks about you. Not too highly, not too lowly. First, he goes around with his jaw hanging on the ground, saying, I'm not worth of anything. I'm not worthy of anything. I can't do anything. I'm so humble. That's not humility. Of course, the person who puts his nose up in the air and says, I'm the greatest of all time. No one can compare to me. That's not humble either. But God gave us all distinct tools and resources and talents. We should not be ashamed to speak about them or use them. But when you use them, we always use them to serve somebody else, not to serve ourselves. Jesus came to serve and not to be served. Matthew 20, 28. Whenever a leader goes after getting his own praise and own reward, that leader is going to go astray eventually. If you're in it for yourself, you're not in it for the right reason. Leaders should not be in it for prestige. They're in it to make a difference with helping people. And they also must be able to admit when they are wrong. Leadership is not a position or a title. It is an action and an example. An unknown quote. So you're not a leader to get a position or a title. You're in a leadership role to do something and be an example. Yes, Debbie.
I was reading somewhere that leaders aren't born, they're made, and it doesn't matter your personality. If you're introvert, extrovert, shy, you can still be a leader.
Sure, it might not be a public leader, but you can lead by example, all the ways we've talked about already. Integrity is an important quality for a leader. 1 Timothy 3:2, in case of an elder, an overseer must be above reproach. Husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. So what is integrity? How would you define integrity? According to Wikipedia, the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles, moral uprightness. A leader needs to be somebody who wants to do the right thing, essentially. You must be able to trust your leaders. You trust them with your welfare, your children's welfare, and your finances. Yeah, that's going to be a good word. We're going to actually talk about that a little later. Consistency comes up again. It's true that integrity alone doesn't make you a leader, but without integrity, you'll never be one. Zig Ziglar. Yeah, I think we're talking about quality leaders when we're assuming the quality leaders when we make the statement leader. And wisdom is a quality that a leader needs to have. 1 Kings 3:28, when all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had handed down, they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. This is, of course, talking about Solomon when he made the decision whose baby the two women were fighting over belonged to. How does a leader show wisdom? Must make wise decisions. Must make wise judgments. Must speak from wisdom. According to Walt Disney, leadership shows judgment, wisdom, personal appeal, and proven competence. Yes, Debbie.
I was thinking it's like what Greg said. All that stuff doesn't happen overnight.
Right. It's grown. It's developed.
Yeah, there's a decision made a long time ago that rules your life.
So when should a man decide he wants to be an elder? At what age? You should start preparing yourself when you're young. When you're 65, it's not the time to determine you want to start being an elder. And it's on you to be responsible yourself, but it's also on the congregation to start seek out men and encourage them. Rhonda? You got to have the full package. That's why when 1 Timothy and Titus, you've got a list of things that an elder needs to be. You can't be one of them and not the others and expect to be a good elder. Courage is important. Deuteronomy 31:23. Then he commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the sons of Israel into the land which I have swore to them, and I will be with you." In what circumstances will a leader need courage? Pardon?
Just about everything.
That's a good answer. I like that. Larry?
I think one of the most ardent ways a person has to show courage is when those that teach false doctrine enter in and be able to stand up to that, even though they have gained the majority to push their way. You know, stand up and get that cleared out and get the congregation back to where it belongs.
Right, exactly.
I would actually generalize that and even say within the secular world, it shows courage when you go against the grain, so to speak. If everyone has an idea you think is wrong, and you're willing to say alone, this isn't right.
So yeah, very good.
There
was a local congregation where an element came into the church that wanted to do things differently, not according to scripture. And they gained a majority of the congregation. And the men in the congregation who wanted to stick to the right way didn't stand up. They didn't have the courage. So the other element took over and forced the conservative ones out. The courage is a great quality needed of an elder, a leader in general. So in what circumstances will a leader need courage to stand up for his right, like Larry was saying, to speak the unpopular thing, to go against the current? That's what Greg said. Douglas MacArthur said this, "A true leader has the confidence to stand alone, the courage to make tough decisions, and the compassion to listen to the needs of others." There's a good combination of ingredients there. Leader needs to have vision. Where there's no vision, the people are unrestrained, but happy is he who keeps the law. Of what does a leader need vision? Vision assumes you're looking out into the future and seeing what you want to, where you want to be. What ways does a leader need vision?
You need to have an end goal in mind, or at least a goal, something to work towards.
Yeah, very good. You must see the way to the goal. You must know how to get on and stay on the path. You must show the path to his followers. A man named Andy Stanley made this comment, "Vision is a mental picture of what should be, fueled by a passion that it should be." So leaders in the church need to see what things should be like and have a passion to get things to that point. That's a very good point. But again, we're assuming the good and evil too. When we talk about vision, we want good at vision. Like, did Adolf Hitler have a vision?
Yeah.
Yeah, not a very.
I would say it's partly good and evil, but also just partly interesting versus uninteresting. If your vision is to, say, maintain the numbers of the church, that's not interesting. The good, better one would be to grow the numbers.
Exactly. I see what you're saying. Another quote here on vision. "A leader is the one who knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way." John Maxwell. When you know the way, you see where you want to be. And then you have the ability to go that way and to bring others with you. competence. I think this came up already, but we'll deal with it here. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. So a leader needs to know what's going on and what, how to get there. Debbie?
No.
Oh. What are the consequences when a leader does not know what he's doing? Failure? I didn't hear that last one.
Anarchy.
Dissatisfaction. Right, dissatisfaction. Now you got one?
Well, I always think about a family. If you have parents, which I would see in the grocery store all the time, that don't know how to parent, and their families were running amok.
Yeah? Need some skills. We're not born with these skills. We need to be developed. Okay, I think we've got enough time to finish this one, make one more. So a leader must lead in the right direction. He must possess the skills that he teaches others to have. And I like this quote by John Maxwell also. The pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change, but the leader adjusts the sails. So you need to be competent in leading the church in any of the capacities we talked about already. Okay, actually, let's stop here for today. We're running out of time. Thanks for your comments and your attention.